Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, baby, make it hot. Ride the cop till you hit the spot. Come on, baby, make it hot.
Doing the doggy style.
Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow, wow, yippee yo, yippee. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow, wow, yippee yo, yippee.
And welcome to another accidental edition of Naked Soma's Eye Contact Radio Hour.
Is that nice?
Well, there's a thing on the internet called Stumble Upon, which should be the theme of us doing this dopey show. We have two guests scheduled. We don't know if they're coming on. We're like you.
No,
we'll be surprised.
That's right. We don't know.
We don't know. Was it you or was it me? So maybe we'll have the Savvy Girls of Summer talking about their book, It Takes More Than Balls, on in a couple of minutes, seeing as we are in the first day of the October baseball playoffs. I was hoping my Mets would be on right now with the Cubbies, but alas, it is the Dodgers, who are kicking the Cubs' ass as we speak. The Cubs, they should lose for another 100 years, although I did to my Mets last week. Rat bastards.
Yeah,
so anyway,
I know.
You said you were watching C-SPAN a couple minutes ago. The fate of the free world pretty much over with, or what?
Yeah, there was a vote. I came in. There were very few senators voting. So then I was like, was that the actual vote? So it wasn't the bailout vote. It was something else that came on. So I guess they're still talking about it. So, but I got a little nervous. There were only a few senators there. So that's not possible. So I'm listening and doing the show and trying to balance things out here.
Yeah, well, for the most part, from my firm position in the financial peanut gallery, it seems to me that then the Scots going to keeps and then the don't Scots going to get the not Scots. So the hammer's about to find its way into the valley again and beat us down and bail out the ones that that live not in the valley. So, you know, to me it's, I don't know, not much of a change from my standard operating conditions of crap. But it might get a little bit saucy for a while around here if, you know, if McDonald's franchises aren't getting a line of credit these days.
Well, there's a lot of people not getting lines of credit. You know, even when Rick went to get his last car, they kept making us put a bigger and bigger down payment down.
Mm-hmm.
So things are really changing.
Have a taste. We will tickle with a cold dill pickle. Fried, fried, fried.
Oh, this is going to be happy, happy eco hour, I think.
Burger at the bun, yes. It's at this point, you know, we're talking to ourselves. There's nobody really listening live. If you're listening live, call us here at 646-478-4847. We don't believe you.
That's right.
We'd like all our listeners to personally call us to let us know that you're actually here on the air with us live.
Right now. Pick up the phone.
And then
six,
we will interview
four,
you to
six.
Figure out if you're mentally competent to run your own life.
That's right.
We did have a call, what was it, about 2 weeks ago we had a call from some guy from Massachusetts who was in the Congo or something?
Yeah, that was
Didn't talk to his family anymore? Yeah. Well,
you're
free to call in tonight. We have plenty of time since our guest is probably AWOL.
It happens.
You know, yeah, one of the things about doing this show that always reminds me of how futile it is to communicate anything to anybody is that, I guess, in the era of texting and email, a lot of information goes back and forth that would constitute basically a nod, like a yes, like a 10-4, like a copy, like a, you know, like that old show emerged, 10-4 Rampart, you know, those kinds of you know, email confirmations kinds of things. And you know, we do that with the show to make sure the guests know when to call in and stuff like that. And for some reason, that isn't enough. To make sure someone's going to do something. We had a guest a little while ago that fell asleep during watching a movie, and you know, so it's like, you know, there's
right.
A lot of, yeah, right. So we've had all kinds of, and then we have ones that call in, and you know, we're talking along, and then like, you know, a Jewish Maserati band comes flying into the show and ruins it. So we've had shows that we had good guests interviewed by outside influences, and shows that we couldn't have guessed at all that things turned out okay, and then we have tonight's show, which could be pretty much a long voicemail that we're leaving here. We have no idea.
Voicemail? Oh, come on.
Yeah, a voicemail from the dam. I hit this button. There's like this long message. It kept going on and on for an hour with commercials. So why don't we just work out our business model here on the air with you guys, because we've had it. We've asked
that's
everybody.
That's a great idea.
You know, we've absolutely gone crazy, but so crazy. Interviewed probably 70 people in the last year or so from all walks of life. Some lived in caves, some in hills, some in mountains, some in Riverdales. We don't know. All experts in different things. And, the one consistent finding I got out of it is that they don't need us. We needed them. We've been guests on maybe a dozen shows, half a dozen shows, whatever it's been, 6, 10, 8 shows. And the consistent theme is no one really knew what the hell we were talking about, but we were remarkably interesting. Which is, I always find that kind of fascinating. Love your stuff, don't understand a word of it. What the hell does that mean? So, we're sitting here, first day of the fourth quarter, free world about to implode, wheels coming off the bus, and we have a couple of projects on the side burner that are cooking in the noodles, and we wanted to know, maybe you guys can help us out. Maybe the fact that we don't have a guest, we might get some calls and say, hey, maybe we don't need them. Maybe we have an audience out there that's listening right now intently with your tinfoil in your head, tuning us in on the brain-free radio. Most of the stuff we've presented to you guys has been sort of like, go look at the website, go do this, go do that. And we know you don't, because if you did, you would have, responded by now. So we're not even going to bother with the website crap, because that goes nowhere. To me, it goes nowhere. I say it, you don't go, if I can vote, you archive, you don't listen, who knows. But I want to talk to you directly about the gap that exists between your ears when it comes to when it comes to learning something new, okay? It could be a foreign language, it could be a new sport, it could be a musical instrument, I don't care. There's always that stage in the beginning where there's a lot more passion than there is purpose. And that's kind of the way we entered into the waters here at Block Talk, even though we were kicked off the air before we even got on the air. We asked for too much help. Amazing. Back when Block Talk had about 14 shows, now it's got 14 million, And we really were enthusiastic about getting our message out because we wanted to be able to make this stuff accessible to more people in an informal way so that they could stop trying to make it into something it's not, which is what happens a lot when people learn a little of what we have to share. And so just maybe as a means of, sort of disarming this stuff, I've been traveling, not so light, with Professor Val for a couple of years now through the woo.
I'm a little lighter, though.
Well, you're lighter, I know. Yeah, we're all documenting your lightness. So why don't you give them that ain't listening a minute of what the frig you understand that it is we're trying to do. So maybe that we can take your statement and then Gnipkinop back to me. And I'll decipher and we'll go back and forth until somebody calls and ends the insanity.
You mean what we're trying to do? What we're trying
I'll start it off. We started out, lo and behold, in the catacombs of the Westchester Holistic Practitioners Network. Exactly. where was that thing?
Hold on. I'll get it. Where the hell is this? let's see here.
We're losing the moment here.
Uh-huh. Where is it? I got it.
Right.
Here it is.
There you go. Keep that one handy for this hour.
All right. I got it.
And so we started off trying to say, when someone goes to someone who is not practicing the conventional methods, the tendency by the practitioner and the SAPE that's receiving the services is to keep it under a rock, not tell anyone about it, maybe even hoard that practitioner for a while. And then when they sort of complete whatever it is they're trying to get done with that person, they go back and they dip in the pond and they find a second person. And they don't really connect the dots. And we're sitting in a group of practitioners saying, how do we present ourselves to the public so that when they go to massage therapist A, they find out about acupuncturist B, and they find out about nutritionist C, and they find out about, you know, exercise guy E, and all that kind of stuff. How do we create a network, a real network? Because what happens when you go to these dopey practitioner meetings, basically they have two or three formats which all look as hokey as any trip you've made to the Lions Club or the local, what the hell is that called when you come into town? Chamber of Commerce, yeah. You stand up, they give you a little minute synopsis about, like, come to me, I'm pretty good, and I do weird stuff. I like bees, whatever the hell it is, right? And they all go around the room doing that. So everyone tries to sell everybody else, other practitioners, on their whatever the frig their modality is. And then usually one practitioner does a little puppet show for all the other practitioners. Hello, hello. Nobody cares. Everyone leaves, has a bagel, goes home. And that's the network. That's basically the full extent of the network. Between meetings, do you know anyone else's email? Oh, no, that's kept under wraps. Are you able to communicate, like, in a social network? Oh, no, we can't have that. So that's the way these tight asses did it. So Val was in power because the leader fell off a chair. Literally. This might be our final show after the lawsuit.
They're going to sue us for every penny we have, and that's pretty much what they're going to get.
That'll take 5 seconds.
That's tomorrow. And that is it for us today. Okay, I don't know. Whatever it is, it's not right on the teleprompter. I don't know what that is. I've never seen that.
No, there it is. We are going to do Sting, yeah.
Okay, but... Okay. Now, I can't read it. There's no words on it.
Okay. Ready? Sure.
There's no words there to play us out. What does that mean, to play us out?
Sting is going to do... It's a video. Sting video.
What is...
For credit.
I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean? To end the show?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, go. Go.
In 5, 4, 3...
That's tomorrow, and that is a...
In 5, 4, 3...
That's tomorrow, and that is it for us today, and we will leave you with a... I can't do it.
Okay.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live! Fuck it! Do it live! I'll write it, and we'll do it live!
Right.
Fucking thing sucks!
In 5, 4, 3...
That's tomorrow, and that is it for us today. I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks again for watching. We'll leave you with Sting and a cut off his new album. Take it away.
There you go. You know, that kind of sums up the experience we had at WHPN. That's tomorrow. So we tried to create, basically we were mad that we were a fall service, seeing that, you know, everybody has events and everybody has, you know, things they're offering and things they do, you know, different times of the year, and we could have one central pace. We connect the dots, and our buddy the Cool Tea. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I'm not kidding.
Wow. Ladies and gentlemen,
you
a stunning development.
More at the grocer, but getting less looks like you're going to get the most. What the fuck are you doing?
Wow. In a stunning upset, we are being joined by the West Coast. Yeah, pull her up. I can't. Punch her up.
I'll get
the submarine. I'll get the submarine, yeah.
All right, ready?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, pulling this mother off the dock with our friends, the Savvy Girls of Summer.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
Are you both there?
Yeah,
oh,
are you there?
Oh, my God. We're stunned. We were whining. Oh, boy.
Is that like you were, like, drinking a lot of wine?
No, well...
No, we were just complaining.
My peach Snapple. No, we couldn't get a hold of you. We had no phone numbers. There were email pings going from you know, other sides of the world, and where are you? And, you know, we had, like, a full-scale, total panic attack that lasted about, I don't know, 12 hours. But we're over it. You're here. Yeah.
Yay!
Yeah. Well, yeah, I got an email this morning, and it all seemed well, so.
Okay. Well, as long as you guys were fine, well, welcome to the show. We're anxious to get a couple of answers to, like, we read a lot about your background, a lot about the origins of the book. In case you guys don't know about it, it's SavvyGirls.com. The book is called, I'll just say it, It Takes More Than Balls. And it's going to take more than five runs for the Cubs tonight, actually. The Dodgers keep adding on here. You guys wrote a book that basically sort of flipped the script on what the stereotypical female baseball fan is portrayed like in the media. So why don't you guys give us a take on, was that the intent, or was that just a byproduct of just being who you are? That you weren't the pink hat kids.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It really is a little bit of both. There is a lot of stereotypes about women in baseball, and of course there are lots of different types of fans. And pink hats don't meet the needs of all women fans. And, there are lots of different women fans. But also when we were writing the book, we started with kind of a different concept for the book, kind of like a Venus and Mars kind of thing. And we realized throughout working on that, you know what, we're not like that. And we really wanted to write a book that we would want to read, and we wanted it to really have our personality and really be an extension of us. So you're right on both accounts. And, by the way, this is Jackie talking. Yeah.
Okay, I was going to say, there's two Jackie's voices, guys. That's Jackie, and the other voice is Deirdre. Go ahead, Deirdre.
Jackie looks awesome in pink, but I don't think she has a pink baseball hat. No.
All right, duly noted. Okay.
We don't have any problem with pink hats, by the way. That became a lightning rod this summer, and all sorts of articles written about how horrible fans are if they wear pink hats, and we don't agree with that statement either. So I want to state that for the record.
Right, yeah, we're not anti-pink anything. We just think that there's plenty of room there for other types of fans.
Uh-huh.
And that baseball, I guess in general, that baseball could do more to appeal to a wider variety, wider scope of women fans. I think that's, you know, and the pink hat thing is just sort of like what Jackie has always said, you know, that's like the easy first step, but then they need to follow through and do a little more to appeal to more fans in general.
No, I'm sorry, just you guys went on a kind of a whirlwind tour of some of the ballparks this summer. Which are the ones that especially on the East Coast, I know you did some work with the Mets that I'm going to get to in a minute, on the East Coast that you felt were more female fan-friendly in the sense that they had that element that was not so much the family atmosphere. I hate that. It gets overplayed a lot at the minor league parks. But that it wasn't just, you know, sort of that stereotypical thing that I see everywhere I go when it comes to female fans in sports where they're sort of put in the corner. Did you feel one stadium more than the other was more receptive to you guys as far as the people that came out to see the book signings or – What was the take that you guys had going through the tour of the ballparks?
Boy, you're kind of opening a can of worms in a way. There's so many different levels of acceptance, and like, you know, did the mm-hmm. team embrace us as visitors coming into their park, and why did they? There's one park in particular that has a very low attendance by women, and they wanted us there. They embraced us and said, we want to increase that. So in a way, that's really embracing women and saying, yes, we want more women, and that's really, you know, warm and fuzzy and friendly. There's another team, the Nationals. We had a couple events with them, and their ladies' nights are huge. They're between 500 and 600 women at each one of these, and they definitely are reaching out to women and wanting them to come to games. However, the ladies' nights there are very, there's a continuum of events. This event is like a carnival. It's a lot of fun.
The Nationals.
There's, you know, drinking going on. It's a party atmosphere. It's not necessarily about baseball itself. It's more about getting women to a party and then to the game and hoping that they love it and come back versus some other events we've done, like with the Mets and the Mariners, that it's a little bit more baseball related. So it's a little bit more, not hardcore, but more baseball related.
Yeah, like what we did with the Mets. I know you said you were going to get to that in a minute, but, you know, just to draw it in contrast, the Nationals event had a big tent. Everybody came. There was wine. There was a big cheese platters out. There was a DJ. There was music. In contrast, it is pretty stark contrast. The Mets decided to put on an event that included a panel of women who worked in baseball. I moderated the panel. Jackie was on it. There were other people that were from the Mets front office. So it actually gave the women attendees an insider's view to how baseball works. There were a lot of the players' wives were there, and they answered questions, everything from how does it feel to have your husband on the road to, you know, do you think they should have pulled the pitcher? I mean, these women are, you know, some of them look like trophy brides, but they live and breathe baseball.
Huh.
Yeah, that's another issue as far as, you know, there's so many layers of the relationship between women in and around baseball, from executive positions to the promotional stuff, and I know Deirdre's got involved with that a little bit, and how that the team is portrayed in the public eye, especially when it comes to, you know, controversial issues like you just talked about, like this whole roadie thing, and I don't know if you guys followed it, but the last road trip the Mets went on, we were actually talking about it on the air, I think, the whole thing with Jose Reyes and the Dirty.com, you know, with the pictures of his paramour in the hotel and all that, and the Mets, they may pay no attention to it the entire last road trip, and this is something else, another stereotypical thing, the baseball Annie, and it's another element that when you think of a female fan of a major sport, whether it's football or any sport, it's first thing you think of is groupie. That's the first stereotype you have to overcome. So how do you separate the genuine fan? You just look at it basically as a community of two chromosomes that go into a game, or do you say there's true fans, and there's phony fans, and there's just the groupies? They're groupies for anything. They're groupies for rock stars, they're groupies for whatever, and that's different than what you're trying to address with your book. Because your book is a history of baseball that puts things into context, that sort of personalizes the numbers a little bit, and gives someone who's a novice, it could be someone who came from another country, didn't understand what baseball was, and they could read that book and go, wow, now I understand what they say, hit and run. Because baseball isn't explained. It's its own vernacular, and it looks like a simple game, but when you're watching it, there's so much going on strategy-wise, especially a National League game, or, you know, games that get involved in extra innings, things like that, where there's a lot of things, like even last Sunday with, you know, why did they bring in Schoenweis? I'm still talking about that. to myself, mostly. And how do you separate that sort of spectrum of, you know, the female fan that really is into baseball, and the one that's going, you know, like the groupies. Do you bother to do that with your community, or do you feel like it's just get the women to the park kind of a thing is really the goal, or am I completely, you know, off base?
You're kind of off base.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I think there's a lot there. You said a lot there, and
yeah, I know, I'm rambling.
Well, no, I think we got what you're trying to get at, and you know, first, you know, let me start with an event called Stitch and Pitch. Have you heard of that? It's
Stitch
played
and
in the
Pitch.
Yeah, Stitch and Pitch.
Where
mostly women get together, and sometimes they'll come in the thousands, 3,000 people, I think the Mariners had last month. And these women come, and a couple men, and they sit there, and they sit in a big block of seats, and they do whatever needlework they're working on. They'll knit a scarf, they do some whatever they're doing, embroidery. And so a lot of people have said, well, you come to the ball game, you're not a real fan, you know, if you're just going to sit there and stitch instead of watching the game. And, you know, it's one of those things where these women are big fans. You know, why else would they be there? And then there's the whole element to it that does it, one, really matter? I mean, it's like they're helping pay for these enormous salaries. And then, what, you know, this full spectrum of fan, I mean, men have that too. What I think is very funny sometimes is as soon as a woman says something like, you know, I like Derek Jeter, he's cute, all of a sudden it becomes, well, you're not a real fan, because she happens to be a woman who notices that Derek Jeter is a good-looking guy. And, you know, it's as if you have to pretend that that part of you as a woman does not exist in order to be taken as a real fan. And I think that's kind of ridiculous to all of a sudden pigeonhole somebody. I used to love Tino Martinez when he played here in the Mariners, and oh, my God, he had the cutest little butt. But, you know, all of a sudden you say something like that, and you're not a real fan. And, you know, women, you know, they have to really watch their words if they want to be taken seriously, and I think that's unfortunate. Yeah.
Well,
and
the other way around, it wouldn't matter if I said Jenny Finch has a nice butt, but she's a good pitcher. You know, they're not drumming me out of the, you know, like, I'm no longer genuinely a fan of women's softball. So, yeah,
right.
that stereotype's going to exist forever. And the one stat you guys, maybe you guys know a little more about the poll than I would, 47%. Of the attendance at baseball stadiums is females?
Well, yeah, it varies what you hear and depending on the year, but it's anywhere between 45% and 47%, and then depending on each club, it varies quite a bit. So there are some clubs that are as high as 49% and some that are in the low 30s.
See, that's wild to me. That really impresses me. I don't know if that's tracked up or down, or it's been basically the same forever or what, but I would never think that's the case.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. In the old days, when old days, like late 1800s, there were ladies' days where there were lots of female attendees because they got free tickets, and the baseball teams tried to get women to come to the park so that the men would behave better. So way back, there were lots of women at the park, and then they started charging, and then attendance kind of went down, and then it started growing again, and I think it's been consistently growing for the last 20 years.
Wow.
But I want to add something to this whole casual fan, true fan, all that. You know, one thing Deirdre and I say a lot when we talk to people is that we've played all the different roles that you hear. There are times that we're sitting there scoring every pitch, watching every movement, thinking really hard about what might be coming next. There are games that we forget the end score because we've been drinking and laughing and talking with our friends. And if someone next to us saw us or they were annoyed by us, they probably would think, those guys, I hate those people that come to games and don't know anything about the game and don't pay attention. Little do they know, we know an awful lot about the game. So I just kind of wanted to add that I think a lot of people play a lot of roles at different times.
Well,
all are welcome.
If you would have saw me between the sixth and ninth inning of last Thursday's game with the Mets won the bottom of the ninth of the pouring rain, I ranged from homicidal to there was a lot of elements of my interest in the game. And the Cub fans in the upper deck that almost were tossed bodily at one point. It was a good way to say goodbye to Shea, actually, the shaking the upper deck and willing a ninth run rally there. But do you guys are diehard Mariner fans, or do you have any team that you like from childhood? Do you have a rooting interest? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm from Boston originally, but I grew up in D.C. before the Nats were there. So by blood, I'm a Red Sox fan, and sort of by breeding, I'm an Orioles fan, and then I'm a Mariners fan by location, by convenience.
That's exhausting. Okay.
Yeah.
What? Go ahead. Your team is what?
Oh, so this is Jackie again. My team is the Tigers from way back. I was born and raised in Detroit. Then I lived in Minneapolis for a little while, so I like the Twins, and now I love the Mariners too. So, yeah, location thing. There's lots of other teams I love as well, and I kind of just like any sort of baseball. I'll go to any game and watch any team, and I just love the sport. Yeah.
Wow. All right. I having three teams in one lifetime, that to me would – I'd be
looking
at multiple
personalities. I don't even
want
to see that.
It's easy
I don't
to
even
keep
to
track
think
of
about it.
Leagues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, again, this is another thing that I think maybe we can get our psychologist here, Professor Val, to kind of testify to, is there's the female, just biology, and then there's the feminine aspect of basically doing anything that would involve invading the male space, which is, 47% of the stadium's full of women. I can't believe, they're all dragged there, with a gun to their head. There actually has to be people that, happen to have two X chromosomes that live and die with their team. And I just don't know if that's something that Major League Baseball even cares about. It sounds like they're, they were oblivious to it. Some of these teams, like you said, were reaching out to you guys. But it sounds like it's still looked at as being sort of, ancillary, kind of an afterthought, kind of a who cares. Where you took my daughter's 12 years old, she's been living and dying with the Mets, and she can actually focus and name the players, and she got into the baseball card, she got into the whole thing. And she's just as obsessed as any 12-year-old boy that's her contemporary, and she would basically, live and die with her team like any other kid would. So I just don't think that baseball nurtures that with any kind of a clear intention. Do you guys see that? Do you see any inclusion from the element of taking kids generationally through it, or is it just basically just they kind of just fall into the stadium and the teams don't really care?
Well, what I would say, just initially, the difference between your daughter, a 12-year-old, your daughter, a 12-year-old girl, and any 12-year-old boy out there who's a baseball-loving fan is probably, correct me if I'm wrong, but if she does, she's in the rare, is that your daughter probably doesn't actually play baseball.
She doesn't play Little League, no. She's into the soccer and the basketball and everything else, but yeah.
So 12-year-old boys probably have the opportunity to play baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where I think Major League Baseball is dropping the ball, so to speak, by not fostering the players, those little girls, to play Little League.
Yeah,
they're told to play softball. You're right. Yeah, they're told to play softball.
About age 10, they get shifted over. And, to go back to your initial question, too,
It's such a huge, you know, clearly back in 1995, the Major League Baseball did a big study on women in baseball, and they found that they needed more women coming to the parks because they control the family household budget and the calendar. And if they don't have women coming to the parks with their family, baseball is going to lower in attendance. Well, they're right, and so they need to attract more women. And then they let each team decide how they were going to handle that information and what they were going to do with it. And each team does very different stuff and has very different intentions. But so there's a broad spectrum. And then, like we kind of alluded to before, it seems like all of their first efforts seem to be, well, if we just throw out some pink merchandise, that'll make the women happy and that'll bring the girls in. But I think they're finding quickly enough, as with any minority group in any sort of setting, you know, there's the obvious things you can do, and then there's the deeper things. And when you start getting to the deeper things, that's when you get full loyalty and commitment and long-term, you know, visitation.
It's like I just read an article today about hunting and how, just because I guess maybe everybody's talking about Sarah Palin, but hunting. So they're talking about how hunting is starting to suffer a little bit with its male base. And hunting was going down, purchases and merchandise were going down, so they started trying to appeal to women hunters. And they found one great, you know, hunter who is a woman who's now 58 years old. And what they started doing is they started making pink rifles. And this is not a joke. And pink, what do you call these?
Bows.
Yeah, they started making all this pink, yeah, so there's pink rifles out there, and they're like, well, this is how we're going to get women to become hunters and start spending their money on hunting stuff.
Pink Elmer Fudd gear and everything?
Right. They get pink, and fishing, same thing. Hunting and fishing.
Sure. I don't get it. How do you camouflage yourself in pink?
What animal is
it's
pink?
It's really stupid.
What animal or tree or whatever?
You have to hunt Huckleberry Hound. He's pink.
Right. Strawberry Quick Trip. Remember that rabbit?
Yeah.
Can you imagine being the poor deer that gets shot by a pink rifle? To the disgrace of the family?
Gunned by the pink rifle.
When I went to the store this weekend to get new gloves for lifting because I'm getting calluses from the other ones, I had a choice of pink. And it pissed me off beyond belief. Could I have a pair of black gloves? Does it have to have pink in it? What is that?
Right.
So the guys in the gym know that I'm a woman. They can't tell by my tits. They have to look at the pink in my gloves. I hate that.
Well, Jackie and I both take a boxing class, and there are some girls there, some women there, who have pink gloves, don't they?
Yeah.
Pink gloves.
Pink boxing
gloves. I'm telling you
gloves.
Guys, somebody's got something going on over the marketing department that they think they wave the pink flag. You guys come running like a bunch of, I don't know, women.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Pink parking spaces,
the
whole thing.
We can relate it to politics right now. Throw something out there and everyone will follow.
Yeah.
Right. Right, exactly. Good one.
Speaking of politics, the financial markets bill, 75 yes and 25 no. 74 yes, 25 no.
Oh, wow.
So,
what was the number? The Senate, 75-24.
74 yes and 25 no, and the rest of them are, I don't know where they are.
That's the bail amount? This is the House or the Senate?
There's
only 100 senators.
Yeah,
oh, okay, so one guy didn't vote.
Yeah, I don't know. Kennedy, well, obviously, he's not available.
Well, yeah, he's kind of just, yeah.
Kennedy is unavailable.
He's unavailable, right. Wow. Well, the thing is, Maybe this is kind of we're going all over the dial here, so we'll get to sports talk radio here. How do you think, because it's been testosterone radio for so long, I mean, God, I can't even imagine. And then, you know, Linda Cohen comes out with her book, and, you know, you see a lot of the female sportscasters, especially the sideline reporters, you know, God, there's a zillion of them that I'm thinking of, but that they, again, they play into the stereotype, and you know, the Jets hired Jenny Stanger, you know, the worker stands, and she's the Florida State, you know, hottie that got attention. You guys don't shy away from the sexual angle of this. How much do you think it's a leap of faith for the public to say, okay, we'll let women into the locker room. We'll let them into the sports casting booth. We'll let them do SportsCenter. You know, we'll let them, you know, be the sideline reporter. But, you know, at a certain point, it just seems like the role that the public and the media is willing to let you guys portray is very, very defined. It's very, very girly girl. And when you know stuff, and when you're actually coming in with the standpoint of, no, I'm just as interested in this as you are, it's almost like they go right back to the gender bias, and it's like chutes and ladders. So no matter how much you know, it's like, you know, Linda Cohen, one of the interviews, she said, she goes, if you stick to the facts, they tend to, you know, let that go after a while. But I just think, you know, from early feedback I've seen on your book and some of the other discussions I've seen, is that there's still that resistance out there to not kind of let you guys get a seat at the table without really going through a little bit of a gauntlet. Did you guys experience that at any point in the process of writing the book, promoting the book, touring around?
Oh, boy. We could tell you lots of stories, but we'll just tell you our very first interview after the book came out. We had to leave the bottom of the ninth at a Mariners game to go do this interview, so we went into this room at Safeco Field. It was an evening of interview, and it was with a DJ named Darkstar in Minneapolis. And we were like, what is this guy going to ask us? Our first interview after the book's come out, and we're all excited. And his very first question is, hey, what are you girls wearing?
Yeah.
And we just were deflated. We literally, our shoulders slumped down, and then we're like, okay, get your moxie back, get your attitude back. And we made some smarty pants comment back and then took back over the interview. But he also said, well, did you have men read the book? What did men think about it? Did you have people? I mean, he just was not letting us up at all. And, you know, in games, and then it often happens as a woman, if you're sitting at a game and you mention something about baseball, then they start giving you the, well, who was on the 1948 lineup of the Mets? And it's like, well, I don't know. And does that matter? Do you really know all this? And if you do, I'm sorry, you need another hobby. But anyway, so we've hit a lot of those kind of barriers. But I do want to say something else. There was a woman we met in Seattle who's a sportscaster, and she kind of flipped this on its head a little bit for me. She actually told me, her station, her TV station, told her to sex it down a little bit. Like she was wearing, Nicole.
Oh.
And that she was wearing too sexy a clothes. And she said, well, this is the way I am. This is what I wear. And she's had to sex it down. And that's the first time I had heard any, I mean, we've met a lot of women broadcasters and sports reporters, and they said exactly what you were saying, that they haven't necessarily been taken seriously.
Well, Seattle's also a pretty prudish market.
Yeah.
That said, and that station had just been bought off by Comcast, and we have another friend who's a reporter who's a woman reporter, that said the hiring of this woman who was told to sex it down was actually a sign of how they were moving towards dolling up baseball coverage.
Yeah.
So it's interesting
But
how do you guys cope with that? I mean, like Erin Andrews, you know, she's on the sideline all these games. She's got the whole issue with the whole thing happened with Pinella and other reporters, you know, giving her, she gets access to these guys because she's a hot woman, you know, in an absolute value. But the fact that she actually knows her stuff seems to be sort of secondary. It's like if she was a complete airhead, she'd be in and out of there. But she actually knows her stuff. And if you study up on people like that have come to the ranks, you know, Linda Cohen, you know, she's someone I really respect because I remember the early days, her doing SportsCenter overnight. And she did some tough interviews with, you know, some pretty, you know, beat-up guys, you know, doing, you know, the hardcore stuff. And if she didn't know her facts, her hair would have blown back, you know, like a little Linus and Peanuts thing. It would have been ugly. But she understood that almost implicitly. And it seems like maybe that's something that's sort of set up front. But you guys coming across, I mean, even the title of your book is sort of, I don't want to say it's emasculating, but it's sort of saying it's like, get beyond this. Get beyond the testosterone. Get beyond the male-dominated way of looking at this. And open it up, because if half your stands are full of females, you know, they can't all be there just because it's an event. They can't all be there. But some of them can be. Just like some of the men. I see some of the men go there, they're reading a book. They're doing anything but watching the game. But it's that atmosphere of being out in the crowd, hanging out. Baseball goes on forever. It's 6 months. You know, you can sit. I mean, the minor league games, the game is incidental. We go to Bridgeport Bluefish games over here. The Long Island Ducks out here on the island. I mean, they're much more about a family of four going out for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and it's everything in between innings with the mascots and the T-shirts and the fan and all that stuff and the face painting and the little, you know, it's much, much more about that than it is about the game. You couldn't even tell these players they're interchangeable. The game is incidental. So it's much more about bringing people out in a crowd and having a good time. So I don't see anything wrong with that. But it seems
there's nothing wrong with that. And the minor leagues have a much different challenge than the major leagues do because they have such turnover. So it's hard to build any fan loyalty towards a player. So they're building fan loyalty towards the team. As far as, you know, women reporters or anything like that's concerned, you know, to think that there would never, you know, one day maybe in my life there won't be a double standard. But I think that said, with the exception of a couple really ugly guys, sportscasters I can think of, you know, most of those are good looking too. And,
Yeah,
I mean, most of those guys, I mean, these guys, you know, they don't want to bring ugly people into people's living rooms. So most of those guys are actually pretty good looking guys, and nobody, you know, nobody worries about whether or not they know sports. Well, it's because a lot of the guys watching it aren't going to start talking about, oh, how good-looking Keith Oberlin is, or it looks like he's getting a little chunky. You know, so it's one of those things that, you know, women, and it's something that Jackie and I, when we wrote this book, it's something that we were very aware of. We needed everything in this book to be right, everything. Mm-hmm. Not a single thing could be wrong, because we knew, much like those women sportscasters, much like Linda Combe, that the spotlight was on us. And everybody was going to be looking through it, looking to find an error, and they would say, aha, see? They don't really know what the heck they're talking about.
Yeah, and MLB actually embraced the book, and, you know, Cal Ripken's endorsing it. So, you know, like I said, the facts are sort of, they're gender-free. They're there for everybody to access. And you put together a book that could be on the shelf of anybody's, you know, home, and will give them a baseball experience that, you know, it saves them a trip to Cooperstown, frankly, because it's like the history of the game is really a social history. Like you talked about why there were ladies' nights and stuff in the beginning to keep the men from behaving because they were drunk and beating each other up. And, you know, so what do you make of, you know, sort of as we kind of wind down here a little bit, the last week at Shea Stadium, now I'm not sure how, you know, directly or indirectly, you know, you guys were involved or you knew about it, but, you know, I was there two out of those seven games. And they're playing the damn Cubs last week. I had to educate my daughter about why I kept saying curse words before the Cubs, because instead of Chicago, because it goes back. It's 69 Cubs. There's a thing with the Cubs. They just gnaw at me. And I spent 40 months of the late 80s in a town called Davenport, Iowa, where I was forced to watch Cub games every summer, and with Harry Carey screaming in my ear, Cubs win, to the point where I still neurotically shake when I hear that. And I just have a thing for the Cubs. So I'm sitting there saying to myself, last week of Shea Stadium, they have 50 ex-Mets rolling into town, you know, for these games, for the celebration on Sunday. And they absolutely blew every chance they had to give the fans what I would consider to be a much-needed shot of adrenaline, because the fan base of the Mets, as you know, is neurotic as hell. We were on our Prozac best last Monday, finally in there, basically waiting to see, like I likened it to going to see a relative in ICU. You know, we're going in, and then the two-game lead over the Brewers, and why not have a pep rally every night? For 2 hours, from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock, bring out the 69 Mets. You know, when they're playing the Cubs, and I don't care, replay the games on the scoreboard. Get people interested in the history of the Mets. But the Mets have really gone the other direction, and they've pursued, you know, the Latin fan and the multicultural fan and less so the lifelong Mets fan. Here it is that there's you know, say goodbye and all that stuff, and they absolutely buried that element of it. They reduced it to taking numbers off the center field fence all summer. But I thought, you know, they had an opportunity there to really make the last week much more of a baseball education. I had the opportunity to go to the thing at the Jacob Javits Center this summer for the All-Star game and with my daughter, and it was done as best. If I could have sat there and drew it up on paper, they couldn't have done it better. They had interactive stuff. They had the old Hall of Famers there. They had memorabilia, they had, you know, the tray cart, you know, all the stuff upstairs, and they really did a good job with it. I just thought that element of it was missing when they wound down Shea, and then they really screwed it up on Sunday by having the celebration after the game, which was just brain dead to me, because it's a 50-50 shot, you get the funeral you got, and now you got to close the stadium with poor Piazza and Seaver doing the Green Mile walk out there, you know, to close the fence, and it was like, that was like going to a wake. So we went from ICU and the patient flatline there in the afternoon at 5 o'clock. So do you guys have any insight about what was going on with the planning involved there or anything? Or do you know what was the inner workings of that?
No, we weren't involved. But it's interesting because I just have had, in the last 2 days, an email conversation with a woman in the marketing department who we work with for our events. And I asked her how everything went. And she said, "Oh, we had a really great celebration at, you know, at the end, and we're looking forward to next year and blah blah blah." So I didn't get much about it, but I'll definitely give her your feedback. And yeah, what an unfortunate circumstance.
I'll send you the link of my rant that I put on Blog Soma that we talked about on the New York Baseball Digest a little while ago, because it was so. I mean, my daughter cried for 3 hours after that game, because she's very attached to Shea. I mean, since she's a baby, pretty much since she's 2 years old, I've been taking her to games. And, you know, when we left Shea Stadium that night at the 7-6, she took a million pictures, the screensaver's up that says Believe. You know, she's very attached. It's the only stadium she's ever known. She's very interested in Citi Field, of course, and she would like, you know, the ticket prices to be better and all that stuff. But her biggest concern was, she goes, how could they let this happen to the stadium? How could they let this happen? Just kept saying the whole time that the celebration was going on, because she doesn't know from Tom Seaver and these guys, I do, and she's like, you know, you see everyone in the stands literally were crying. They were literally crying for an hour and a half. They were crying, and it was just so avoidable to me. I mean, if you do that celebration during the rain delay at 1 o'clock, and then we take the field at 2 o'clock, even Ollie P couldn't have screwed up that game. Even Schoenweiss couldn't have screwed up that game. Ugh. You know, and Schoenweiss, by the way, his wife had a premature child. He was in the hospital all week. He missed Wednesday's game because the child was in the hospital. He's a train wreck. They drag him into the biggest moment of the season. I still say Schoenweiss every time I get him in with myself. What was he thinking? And it's that heartbreak kind of connection that I'm not sure if Major League Baseball is aware of the fact that it does touch the lives of the female fan in a very similar way that it would, because the families deal with it too. I mean, the families of these baseball players deal with a lot of stuff. I mean, it happened in football here. Plexiglas Burress has had domestic stuff going on. So do you guys get into that a little bit with the discussions with your circle around the element of not just the player, but everything around it that would evolve from a female standpoint about living with an athlete or being around it, or we talk about the media a little bit. Is there anything else that you think is sort of like a sacred cow that doesn't get addressed as far as how this affects people's lives? Baseball's very social. Yeah.
It's a big, big topic. First of all, I want to say I understand what your daughter's going through, because as a Tigers fan growing up and raised a Tigers fan, we lost Tiger Stadium, and that was a very, very, very sad thing. And so I cried, of course, and I totally understand. And I guess I would start by saying every team we've talked to, they do say out loud that they understand the connection of people and the team. Like, it's like, but they're trying to appeal to millions of people and trying to reach out to new markets, and it's a big brand and it's a big marketing thing, and they're trying to do a lot. So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question. It's like, mm-hmm. It's a difficult job for them, but I have gotten the feeling that people do understand that there's an emotional connection. And part of the things that Deirdre and I try to submit as ideas for events that will resonate with women have to do with that connection with the team. And we keep telling them, and a lot of them believe it. If you can get them to love your team, and the way you can get to love your team is for them to know more about you, know more about the front office, know more about the stadium history, know more about the players and their families, then they will get attached to you and your team, and they'll keep coming back. I would agree with everything you're saying, and saying that that's part of what our gig is that we're trying to get people to relate to the teams on a more emotional and personal level so that then they want to come back. It's less about knowing all the numbers and the stats and what's going out on the field, mm-hmm. although you want to know that too, or else you're not going to have a whole lot of fun at games because you don't know what's going on, or you may not for the long haul. So does that answer your question at all?
Yeah, that's perfect, because like I said, what I'm trying to get at is there's a human side to this. It doesn't involve male or female. Sports is extremely it's a social barometer on a lot of levels, but it brings up a lot of the human elements that are normally tucked away, and you know, maybe there's some road rage going to the game, but you learn a lot out of the ball game, laugh, cry, whatever, and a lot of times, you know that classic thing, there's no crying in baseball. I always try to remind my daughter of that one. Is that you're going through something that's very It's culturally unique, I guess. I don't know, because it seems like in other countries it's the soccer team that they identify with, and in this country it's the football and the baseball teams, and a lot of times it's the high school level that it resonates with, and you know, different parts of the country. It's a strange animal from a marketing standpoint to see how sort of one-eyed they are about it, where they just look at the numbers and the financial stuff and things like that, and I think you guys addressed it. One more thing on a light note. Did you guys get to go down to the Florida Marlins stadium on your tour?
Yes, we did.
Okay. What a mausoleum, right.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. What a horrible place to see a ball game. We
it
had a great
looks as bad as... Yeah, okay, go ahead.
The stadium was blinding. Yeah, the Dodgers just closed it out. 72.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that. Wow.
You know, I want to add, like, a little thing about what you're saying about your daughter. During the summer, we were saying how when Jackie and I were on the book tour, my family was going to be with us, and I said, hey, we're going to go to Yankee Stadium. And both of the kids said, boo, boo. And I said, no, let me explain something. You know, going to Yankee Stadium is okay. You know, you can root for the other team, whatever. And then my daughter leans forward. She's 8. And my daughter leans forward as we're driving, and she said, Mom, can you remind me again why we hate the Yankees? And I was like, just don't worry about it.
Yeah, you just hate them. That's all you need to know.
Some things just need to be a reflex. Don't explain. You know, you'll reason enough if you watch long enough to hate them. My God.
Exactly.
The way they did their celebration, by the way, was, you know, it was almost like the way they did their old-timers' day. They're so pompous. They're so full of themselves. They cannot lose enough. I'm looking toward the Bronx, and I'm sneering as I'm talking to you right now. I hate them so much. Back to the Marlins for a minute. They did a thing in the spring. I don't know if it even played out over the season, but they hired a bunch of fat guys to be the manatees, like the male cheerleaders.
Oh, yeah, they were there at our event where we were.
Okay. Now, here's a classic case of we're going to reverse everything, and we're going to have to, because they got the girls dancing too, right? And
right.
That's like the only attraction going on there. So it's like, so here's these manatee guys who I think became semi-popular locally. I saw the article about it. Now, there's nobody down there saying, oh, you're exploiting these fat guys and this big. They think it's a big goof. So I just found that, you know, here's another example where, you know, when you reverse roles, whatever it is, whatever the classic role is, there seems to be a double standard that gets kind of squared where we're going to ignore that. And it just seems like, you know, it happened with the Jets with their cheerleaders too. They have their little cheerleader thing, and it was another thing where the Giants don't have cheerleaders in football here, and I just think closing it up. Do you think there's almost like an unspoken sort of kind of division of labor where we're just accepting where women do this, men do that when it comes to sports, and anytime that line is blurred across, they're somehow challenged. There's going to be this sort of almost implicit uprising where someone's going to say, hey, that's out of line. And your book is actually not attempting to cross the borderline. It's attempting almost to kind of bypass it, ignore it, and say, here, we don't care what you think of, you know, this or that, or have this assumption. This is something we think everybody should have. We happen to be women doing this. We happen to advocate this. But if we make it more about us versus them, you're going to shove us back into the stereotypes anyway. They're either going to think you're lesbians or groupies or whatever their stereotype is, and your book goes a long way to kind of factually getting underneath that bar and then emotionally getting over that bar. So just in closing, do you think that misconception or that sort of cultural assumption is somehow being challenged a little bit by you and Linda Collins and people like that, or are we still going to have that double standard the next generation or so? By the time my daughter's at,
Yeah, I would like to think that we've changed perception somehow. I unfortunately don't think that it's really going to make that much of a mark, other than for the people who actually read our book, maybe like your daughter one day, or even my daughter, and our families. I mean, it's helped push the envelope a little bit for everybody, and people who know that Jackie and I wrote a baseball book, the first thing they ask is, what did you write it about? We're like, we wrote it about baseball. What did you write it about? It says, so the other thing is when we're first getting this book published, we're trying to find a publisher, all the editors loved the writing. Everybody loved it. And then when it got to the marketing department, we got shot down at all of the biggest houses. The editors loved us at all the biggest houses, but we got shut down at the end of the road. It was, who are these girls? And then finally, we got asked by one of the big houses to ghostwrite the book for like a player's wife.
Wow.
So, there's plenty of guys out there that write books. I mean, there's plenty of them who don't have chops, so to speak, in the sports arena, either through sports writing or anything, or playing, who write plenty of baseball books. But as soon as the two of us tried to do it, it needed
some explanation.
Yeah, that you couldn't possibly just be women writing a serious baseball book. And so to answer the question, I guess our gut reaction is that the double standard exists and will exist for quite some time. It's the perfect example of, like, we couldn't just write the book. We had to be a wife, or we had to be a something.
Yeah. Your mileage may differ.
It would have been published a long time ago had we been a player's wife. Or had
By the way, guys, for those joining us later, archiving on speed dial, it's the book's called Takes More Than Balls, and the cover is pink, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if you guys won or lost that battle, but the cover is pink of the book there. So it's like I said, I've done the sample chapters, read all the interviews, and my daughter will be getting a copy for her birthday on January 1st, along with some Met tickets, if I could swing them, for opening day at Citi Field. But I will definitely get you guys the my Wasted Nostalgia article I put on Blog Soma about it, and you can pass it along to the Met people, because I think they really they misjudged their fan base this week. If you saw the – and I saw millions of, feedback and pictures and stuff. A lot of crying little girls that were, I could tell. They were like my daughter at 6, 7, or 8 years old, and this was their home too. And they were, I just feel like they missed an opportunity to make it something that the whole fan base can get behind and use that as a weapon against the Vipers from Florida. So last weekend. So thanks a lot for joining us tonight. I'm totally shocked and overjoyed you guys. Got up here tonight. We apologize for any of the mishmash in between trying to connect to you guys today. And thanks for joining us here on Naked Soma.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thanks, ladies.
All right.
That was fun.
Bye.
All right, guys. Take care. Enjoy the playoffs.
Thanks. You too. Bye.
Bye now.
Oh, there you go.
There you go where?
There you go using the H word and hoping that they remembered to call, and there they were.
I couldn't believe it. Yeah, I was shy. That was an interview. I mean, I was a little nervous, a little pent up.
Yeah.
Had a lot of anxiety. They got me through it. Yeah, it was one of those things. That book is very, it's different because they're not trying to defend or define, the female fan from what of you. Like I said, the whole spectrum is represented. They say they might play multiple roles within the same game. What they're trying to say is that this is an underserved, underappreciated fan base, a segment of the fan base that.
Yeah, it makes sense.
If they had that knowledge, they would be able to move along that spectrum and not just be a baseball annie or a groupie or a pink hat, as they say. All right. So in summary, we've covered everything from why no one listens to the show to all about baseball and things like that there, and the manatees, which of course you loved.
Yes, that was funny.
That's that, guys. Yeah. God.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I'm exhausted. So Now, the financial future of the country, we didn't get into the economics of baseball with them. I wish I would have. But, Scott, why don't you give me your skinny on why we're perched on financial doom now that the bill has been passed?
Well, it's been passed only in the Senate. Congress is Friday.
Oh. And tomorrow's the debate.
Yeah, well...
Now, there's another thing we should have talked about. Damn it, damn it, damn it!
What did you want to talk about?
Well, they mentioned Sarah Palin there with the hunting, the pink rifle. You know? There's another thing that's another thing about the way that a man can basically, if you're going to compete for the same job, vice president, right? He has such a double standard in the way that he can aggressively attack her statements tomorrow night. Because if he says it too aggressively, he's a bully. If he panders to her, then he's looked at as being elitist and being, kind of looking down his nose at her. There's almost no way for Joe Biden to come. If he was debating another man tomorrow, it would strictly be about the worldviews that the two of them are representing. But because of the fact that she's what she is, and she's not bimbo, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that the bar has been set pretty low for her to perform. If she actually prattles off, whole sentences, she wins. Whether they make any sense or not is irrelevant. So it's almost like Joe Biden has to take the mindset of the less I say, the better, because I just let her fall on her nose all by herself. And it's almost like he has to kind of like fight this thing almost like a martial artist, where it's more about, leveraging her and kind of a judo, a chop, 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 kind of like, letting her kind of kind of go around the horn here. And I just wish I could have got into that with those two of, you know, politics aside, if you have a man and a woman competing for the same job, or in this case, you know, looking at the same game of baseball, why is it that when the man attacks the woman's point of view, he's looked at as attacking all women instead of that point of view, and then when the woman attacks the man, of course, the man is just by himself. That's another double standard that never goes away. We're always the bully. Hence, the penis loses again.
Well, that's because you guys can stand and pee, and we're jealous.
I think it comes down to that, our ability to pee anywhere we want.
Yeah, you know what? You know, as a camper, I have to say that, you know, that always pissed me off.
All right, for all you still streaming in the archive, because we're off the air, we will see you next week with more fun and games here on Naked Soma with guests that we cannot name and probably can't.
Testicle Tuesday.
So see you next week. Travel light, everybody, and be safe. And by all means, buy the book. Takes more than balls. Be well.
That's right. Bye-bye.